Welcome to the Federal Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federal Society's International and National Security Law Practice Group, was recorded on Thursday, June 29, 2017, during a live Courthouse Steps telephone conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members.
Welcome to the Federalist Society's telephone conference call. This afternoon, we'll hear about the Supreme Court decision in Hernandez v. Mesa, which came down this Monday. My name is Laura Flint. I'm the Deputy Director of Practice Groups here at the Federalist Society. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the experts on today's call. Today, we are happy to have with us Stephen Geyer, who is Senior Counsel on the House Committee on Homeland Security. I will turn it over to Stephen to get us started. After opening remarks, we'll go to audience question and answer. Thank you for speaking with us. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Laura, and good afternoon, everybody on the call. Thanks for joining us today. Yeah, here to talk about the Supreme Court decision in Hernandez v. Mesa that came down this past Monday. I'll start with I'll go through this little recitation of the facts and then the procedural history and then get down to the ruling, which was a pretty short per curiam ruling from the court, and then with a lot to discuss within, and then sort of take my guess as what's going to happen going forward here. So this case dates back to 2010, so over 7 years ago. It was an incident of a cross-border shooting in El Paso, Texas, of a 15-year-old Mexican citizen. The shooting itself took place in what has become known as a concrete culvert in El Paso, Texas, lining the border between El Paso, Texas and Ciudad Juarez. So it's sort of important for you to understand what this culvert is, because it plays very, very big in the case here. It is a sort of a concrete strip of land running north to south along the border. To the east is a fence on the United States side. To the west is a fence on the Mexican side. It runs about 270 feet wide. Water that used to run through the culvert, but now it's dry. And it is jointly operated and maintained by the United States and Mexico. Now, the facts of the case are in pretty great dispute. That should be said up front. But as the opinion noted, we're dealing with a motion to dismiss, and so we have to confine ourselves to the facts as alleged in the complaint. And the facts as alleged in the complaint are that Sergio Hernandez, the 15-year-old boy, was playing with a friend in this concrete culvert, playing a game where they would run up to the U.S. fence, touch it, and then run back. At some point, Agent Mesa of the United States Border Patrol grabbed Hernandez's friend by the collar, while Hernandez ran back onto the Mexican side but still within this concrete culvert. And then at some point, Agent Mesa shot and killed Hernandez. The Department of Justice investigated the case and decided that it was not bringing criminal or civil charges against Agent Mesa, and so the Hernandez family sued in federal district court in Texas. They sought damages under Bivens, asserting a Bivens claim, saying that Mesa violated Hernandez's Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights. The district court dismissed. They granted Mesa's motion to dismiss. That was appealed to the Fifth Circuit. A three-judge panel in the Fifth Circuit reversed in part and affirmed in part. They said that Hernandez lacked any Fourth Amendment rights because he was not a U.S. citizen, not on U.S. soil. But they said that Agent Mesa violated his Fifth Amendment rights and extended Bivens to that Fifth Amendment violation, and they said that Mesa was not entitled to qualified immunity. The Fifth Circuit then heard the case in Bonk, and in Bonk panel was formed. They said that they affirmed the district court's motion dismissal. They said that there was no Fourth Amendment claim. They said they were divided on the Fifth Amendment claim, but they were unanimous that Mesa was entitled to qualified immunity. And because there was no Fourth Amendment claim and because he was entitled to Fifth Amendment immunity, they said we're not going to address the Bivens issue. And so that was appealed to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, it was on the docket for quite a long time, I think over a year, until they finally granted certiorari. And they accepted the two questions that were presented, which was, does the Fourth Amendment apply extraterritorially in this case? And if so, what standard is to be applied? It's sort of going back to the Boumediene case versus the Verdugo case, how are we to tell if it applies extraterritorially at all? And then can qualified immunity be granted based on facts unknown to the officer at the time of the shooting? In addition to that, the court added a third question, which was, can a Bivens claim be asserted in this case? And so the government really sort of latched on, because they sought the opinion of the Solicitor General, and they really latched on to that Bivens question and briefed heavily on that, and said that it was in their opinion, it was the antecedent question of this case, and that it Bivens should not be extended. So during oral arguments, this was heard in February, in late February, it was hard to pin down some of the justices where they were on the Fourth Amendment issue. They were trying very hard to extract a clear rule from Hernandez's attorney that could be applied in future cases. And for some people, like Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Alito, it was very clear where they were. The rule that the attorney was trying to put forward was just very, very narrow, very confined, pretty much to the facts of this case, and couldn't be applied in any other context. People like Justice Ginsburg was very clear, was on the other side. But people like Justice Breyer, even Justice Kagan to some extent, were sort of, at least from the oral argument, were sort of iffy, and you couldn't really tell where the vote count would lie. On the Bivens issue, on the other hand, it was very clear. There was a clear 4-4 split, and Justice Kennedy, in particular, was very clear that, in my view, was pretty hesitant to extend Bivens to the case at hand, which, obviously, at that time, Justice Gorsuch was not on the bench, and so it was pretty clear to me that this was going to be tricky going forward for them to come to any sort of clear, definitive ruling one way or the another, or the other. And so this past Monday, the ruling came out, and what they did was clearly, to me, some sort of a compromise position. They vacated the Fifth Circuit's ruling, and they sent it back, and they pretty much said two things. They said, one, you did things out of order. Two, you need to take our decision in the Abbasi case that was decided a week prior on June 19th. You need to take that into account. So what do I mean by that? They said that they latched onto the government's argument that the Bivens question was the antecedent question to be addressed before any others. The Fifth Circuit, so in other words, you take care of Bivens first, address that first. Is there a Bivens extension here? Yes. Okay, then move on to Fourth Amendment consideration, Fifth Amendment consideration, qualified immunity. If not, then you can stop. Fifth Circuit did the opposite. They said there's no Fourth Amendment, he has qualified immunity, and so we don't have to talk about Bivens. So the per curiam opinion said look at Bivens first. And when you're doing that, take into consideration the opinion that we just released in a week prior, Ziegler v. Abbasi. Now, I know there's a teleforum tomorrow on the Ziegler v. Abbasi case, so I'm not going to go too much into it, but I will just quote the Abbasi quote that was quoted in the Hernandez case. And they said that the Bivens inquiry with Abbasi, you know, in mind, must concentrate on whether the judiciary is well-suited, absent congressional action or instruction, to consider and weigh the costs and benefits of allowing a damages action to proceed. That, to me, is a very striking quote that was lifted from Abbasi and inserted into the Hernandez opinion, because Justice Kennedy at the oral argument, as I said, was sort of raising the red flag that this was a issue of foreign affairs that was best left to the political branches. And so that combined that with that quote, and that quote was from Abbasi, was written by Justice Kennedy, and it sort of strikes me as Justice Kennedy saying, you know, remember what I said at oral argument? Yeah, that's and then remember what I said in Abbasi. Put those two together, and it's probably leaning towards no Bivens extension in this case. But I could be wrong. Who knows? And it's worth addressing the difference between Abbasi and the Hernandez case. In the Abbasi case, you may know, we were dealing with a six-member court. There was no Justice Gorsuch at the time. Justice Kagan had to recuse herself, and Justice Sotomayor had to recuse herself. So we had a very clear 4-2 decision authored by Justice Kennedy. In the Hernandez decision, Justice Gorsuch was not on the bench, but the recusals were not there. So we had a very clear 4-4 split on the Bivens issue. It was on full display. You could just tell. And so they probably didn't have a majority vote to just say, okay, we just decided Abbasi, let's apply Abbasi here and then rule one way or the other whether or not Bivens is extended. So rather than schedule a rehearing in the fall, which they did for a couple other cases, they just came up with this compromise. It got 5 votes, and they said, okay, send it back down and take another look. So as far as this Bivens being the antecedent question, as far as you always address Bivens first, they said it doesn't always have to be that way. But in this case, the Fourth Amendment question is, quote, sensitive and may have consequences that are far-reaching. And so for that reason, and I guess we can sort of use that language in saying, I guess, is that the standard for whether or not a Bivens question must come first? Is it only in cases where it may be sensitive and consequences are far-reaching? Maybe. But in this case, he said, yes, that is the case. And so they vacated the Fourth Amendment stuff, and they said the issue may not even be necessary, depending on what happens in the Bivens analysis. So again, saying if the answer is no, you don't have to talk about Fourth Amendment. With the Fifth Amendment stuff and the qualified immunity, it was very interesting because the qualified immunity stuff barely came up at oral argument at all. It was none of the attorneys brought it up by themselves. And it was a subject of one very short question from Justice Roberts, and then that was it. And so, but they vacated that ruling, and they said that the Fifth Circuit erred in granting qualified immunity because they did so based on facts learned by the officer after the incident. They said in this case that the Hernandez's nationality and the extent of his ties to the United States were not known by Officer Agent Mesa at the time of the shooting, and you can't do that. You can't take those kind of facts into account when you're deciding qualified immunity. But again, they make clear that when they were talking about qualified immunity in that section of the per curiam opinion, they said if the answer to Bivens is no, you don't have to talk about it. So that was pretty much what they said in the per curiam opinion. There were 3 dissenters. The first one was Justice Thomas. He said, pretty much, we don't need to send this back to the Fifth Circuit. We can just decide this now. We took care of Abbasi. We can take care of Hernandez. The circumstances are very different from Bivens, and so we shouldn't apply Bivens, and we're done here. I don't know why we're wasting our time sending this back down. But there were probably just not, 5 votes for that view. The other dissenters were Breyer and Ginsburg, who joined together in a dissent written by Justice Breyer. And he went into a long analysis of, first he said that the whole antecedent question, or he didn't say it explicitly, but impliedly, the whole question of it being an antecedent question is, you don't have to do that. That shouldn't be the case. He's had an analysis of why this culvert was a Fourth Amendment protection should be applied in this culvert, even though it's clear that he was on the Mexican side. He said that the culvert was a unique area with, quote, special border-related physical features that was jointly operated and maintained by the United States and Mexico. For this and a whole other bunch of reasons, Justice Breyer said it has sufficient involvement with and connection to the United States, and so Fourth Amendment should apply extraterritoriality. Which surprised me because at oral argument, Justice Breyer seemed very, not sold, if you will, on the rule that was being put forth by the Hernandez attorney's attorney. But I guess he just, has a good poker face or something like that because he just bought into it 100% and said, yep, this is exactly the type of thing that we should be applying the Fourth Amendment to. And He said he would have decided the Fourth Amendment issue and then remanded the Bivens issue down to back to the Fifth Circuit. So he was completely okay with going, you know, in reverse order, if you will. So looking ahead a bit now, he's obviously going to go back to the Fifth Circuit. In my view, it's a pretty tough road ahead for the Hernandez family. It's been over 7 years now since the shooting, and it's going to go on a little bit longer. If I could sort of like read the tea leaves here, the court pretty much provided a clear path for the Fifth Circuit to just say no on the Bivens issue and then not address the merits and sort of give them an easy way out. As I mentioned earlier, Kennedy, during oral arguments, voiced a lot of skepticism that the Bivens should be extended here because it involved matters of foreign affairs, and those are best left to the political branches, certainly the government, and certainly Mesa's attorneys are going to pick up on that line of thought and really drive it home back at the Fifth Circuit and then back at the Supreme Court if it comes back. Add to it that now we're not dealing with the 4-4 split that we were dealing with in February. Justice Gorsuch is on the bench. I guess you can presume that that he would be with the Justice Thomas and Justice Alito, Chief Justice Roberts, and vote to not extend Bivens, and then in line with the whole antecedent question line of thinking, say we're not going to address the other stuff. So, but of course, it all depends on what panel gets chosen down at the Fifth Circuit, and it could go either way. So I will leave it there. It's pretty, I guess, I don't want to say straightforward, but pretty, well, it is what it is. And I'm happy to take any questions and take it from there.
Let's go to audience questions. In a moment, you'll hear a prompt indicating that the floor mode has been turned on. After that, to request the floor, enter star, then the pound key. When we get to your request, you will hear a prompt, and then you may ask your question. We will answer questions in the order in which they are received. Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. While we wait for our first audience question, I'll ask one of my own. When we did this podcast teleforum in February, you mentioned another decision like this one in the Ninth Circuit. How do you think that will play out after the court's decision on Monday?
Right. So there's a case in the Ninth Circuit out of Arizona called Swartz v. Rodriguez. That's a very similar cross-border shooting case. They heard oral arguments on the case in October. Excuse me. But they didn't issue an opinion because they said we're just going to wait for the Supreme Court to rule on Mesa. In that case, in the Ninth Circuit, they didn't talk about the Bivens question either. And so my guess is that they will probably have to go back and say, okay, they vacated the Fifth Circuit's opinion. They said to address Bivens as the antecedent question. We probably should do the same here. I did check the docket yesterday, and then again this morning, and I saw no action on the Swartz case. So it's unknown at this point, but it's possible that they would go back and they might do it before the Fifth Circuit had a chance to. And say it's I guess it's possible that they would say yes to Bivens and then and rule the other way on Fourth and Fifth Amendment. It's possible that could lead to a circuit split, and between the Ninth and the Fifth Circuit, that's the southern border right there. And so certainly if that were to happen, then we would come back to the Supreme Court, and they would have to address it again. So that's sort of a wait and see for the Ninth Circuit, just as it is for the Fifth Circuit now.
Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. I'll make a brief announcement. Our next Teleforum conference call is scheduled for later today at 2 p.m. That call will be an administrative law teleforum on improving the use of science and regulation, and will feature the Honorable Susan E. Dudley, Director of Regulatory Studies Center and Distinguished Professor of Practice at the George Washington University. Reminder to keep an eye out for emails announcing upcoming Teleforum calls, and to consult the full schedule of our upcoming calls on the Federalist Society's website, fedsoc.org. Also available there are podcasts of previously recorded Teleforum calls you may have missed. Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. Not seeing any. I remember you mentioned Gorsuch in your opening. How do you think that he would have sided in this case, and would it have affected the decision?
Sure, it would have affected the decision, in my view, in that if he had been on the bench, I guess we can, I don't want to say presume, but we can predict that he would have voted not to extend Bivens to this case. And if we were also to presume that Justice Kennedy would have voted the same way, which I think he would have based on his questioning, then we would have had a clear majority like they had with the Abbasi case, where Justice Kennedy wrote the opinion to not extend Bivens. And then my guess is they probably would not have addressed the merits of the case, which I think is the sort of their preferred method, or at least the preferred method of some of on the court. But they just couldn't get there as far as votes. So they said, okay, we'll kick this back down with these like sort of clear guidelines of how to address the Bivens question. These sort of like clear, you know, wink and nod type of things of, you know, it's okay, you can just take care of Bivens. And based on our Abbasi case, that should probably be, you know, no Bivens extension. And then you don't even have to talk about the Fourth and Fifth Amendment stuff. We're sort of giving you an easy way out, so just take it, you know, type of thing.
Let's go to our first audience question.
This is Ned Jacobs. Does this case and the other case that was recently decided by the Supreme Court with regard to the immigration ban have indications that perhaps the Supreme Court is interested in expanding individual constitutional rights beyond people who are either citizens or residents of the United States to those outside of the United States?
Well, there are certainly members of the court that would like that, and Justice Breyer and Justice Ginsburg made that very clear. I imagine that Sotomayor and Kagan, if it had gotten to a ruling on the merits, would have joined Breyer and Ginsburg in that line of thought. But I think they just saw the writing on the wall and said it would be easier to do a compromise for now. Taken with the quote unquote travel ban case that was also issued that day, I don't think there's a clear majority of the court that is interested in expanding the rights as you described it. I think both in this case, I think one similarity both in this case and in that case is that the sort of let's compromise for now and come to some sort of middle ground, pragmatic quasi-resolution, and then we can address the tougher stuff later if we need to, but hopefully we don't need to.
We have another caller. Let's go to our next question.
Hi, Mr. Geyer. This is Austin Black. I just want to say thank you, first off, for doing this. And you've touched on this a little bit already, but I was curious how likely you think it will be for the Supreme Court to actually hear this case again. I know you said that it seems like they sort of bounced it back down to the Fifth Circuit because they didn't really want to touch on the merits because of the international issues of the case. But I was just curious what you think the likelihood of them getting this case again would be.
Right, right. So back when I did the teleform back in February, shortly after oral arguments, I made the prediction that they're probably going to hear this again. And my line of thought for that was that we were probably going to have a rehearing, because I thought it was going to be a 4-4 split. And I guess I wasn't completely right because there's not a rehearing. But I guess it all depends on what the Fifth Circuit does and what the Ninth Circuit does with their case now, too. I think it's obviously the composition of the Ninth Circuit and the Fifth Circuit are quite different. I think that sort of expands the probability of there being a circuit split. And that's obviously your textbook example of granting cert. Obviously, it only takes 4 members of the court to grant cert. And so if 4 members didn't like what the Fifth Circuit did with it, then they could say bring it back up. But at the same time, let's say the Fifth Circuit comes to an opinion that is more in line with you know the Chief Justice Roberts' thinking. Would the four quote unquote liberal members of the court want to vote to bring it up to the Supreme Court and have another negative in their view, negative Bivens ruling on the record? Maybe not. So at this point, let's call it 50-50, and I'll weasel my way out of a firm answer.
Thank you.
We'll make another call for questions. Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. Not seeing any. Do you think this opinion signals that Sotomayor and Kagan, who were recused in Abbasi, are on board with the Abbasi decision?
No, I wouldn't go that far. If I had to guess, based on the Bivens discussion that was had at oral argument in the Hernandez case, they would not have voted with the Justice Kennedy in the Abbasi case.
I'll make a final call for questions. Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. Not seeing any, would you like to make any final remarks?
Nope, I think we've pretty much covered the waterfront, and thank you again for having me on.
And thank you for joining us. We welcome listener feedback by email at info@fedsoc.org. Thank you all for joining us. We are adjourned.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at fedsoc.org/multimedia.